Know that for the time in American history, the U.S. Army was used in a war operation against the American people?
Yeah.
Right near here, up in Humboldt County, about 200 miles north of San Francisco, right near a town called Shelter Cove, get this, 300 to 400 American GIs dressed and fully armed with the automatic rifles, armed for battle, fanned out on maneuvers through the woods, backed up by a dozen Black Hawk attack helicopters. The mountain people up there were frightened out of their wits. They thought there was a war going on, especially the ones who had soldiers kicking in the doors to their cabins and putting guns to their heads in front of their children. Why? Who was the enemy in this war? Not the communists, not Saddam Hussein, not Earth First or even the Spotted Owl. No. The enemy. They called out the army to put down, secretly, so as few people outside of Humboldt would get alarmed as possible. It wasn't even a person or an army or a terrorist group. It was a plant. The marijuana plant. And they actually did find a few for the GIs to pull up, and then they had to fly in more from the government stash so the pile would look big enough when they lit the bonfire for the network TV news cameras so they could say, yes, another triumph in the drug war. Drug war. War. The American army sent to war against the American people. And we're supposed to feel relieved and secure and protected. Protected from what? A lot of people with more guts than I'll ever have risked their life and limb all last summer at the Earth First Redwood Summer Action up in Humboldt County. They were chaining themselves to redwoods that were three times wider than they were spread-eagled. They were 800 years old as the saws buzzed right over their heads. They stood in the dirt as the bulldozers charged them and stopped right at their toes. Or people waved clubs at them, charged them with logging trucks, shotguns, you name it. All to try and save some of the last unspoiled virgin forest we have left anywhere in this country from being chopped down and made into toilet paper, TV guides, and the Weekly World News. On the other side, the loggers saying, what about our jobs? What about our...
Now, please pay attention. I'm giving you the benefit of years of experience of riding on subways. Now, you know the IRT and the BMT, where you change, you get off, and you get on?
No.
Well, listen. It's uptown by local to Van Cortlandt Park. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on, and then downtown by local to Sheepshead Bay. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, and up on the east side to Pelham Bay Park. Wake up, get out, go down, cross over, go up, get on, and then way out to Brooklyn and Far Rockaway. Wake up, get out, go up, cross over, go down, get on. Again.
Coming up, it's Baffert Spears Broadside, 2 hours of civil rights in Santa Cruz. We hope to have some incoming reports today from Beckerbacker Becky Johnson from BD and his renewed trial. He's been harassed this morning with a sentencing hearing. And plus we have, of course, usual updates from Sleep Out at City Hall, Keith McHenry in San Francisco, and your very own Bathrobes Pierre Robert down here in Santa Cruz. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 96.3 FM. Stay tuned with us and give us a call because our lines are going to be open throughout the next 2 hours, 427-3772.
Like you're hipping a roll wrong, like she's going to get lost. I'll tell you how to go.
Get on the magic train of dreams and ride through the night. Oh, to fly through the night, all the cares of the day. Lulled by wheels that one will find, sweetly.
That was Subwayzer for Sleeping, one of my snooziest musicals. I know how much you all love my musical selections, so we'll cut them short here and now. But that's a great musical from the early 60s. And, hey, we have a shortage of music in the studio right now, at least music that is pertinent to sleep. So I want all you sleep watchers to send your tapes in here to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Leave them right on top of the master console with a note for me, Bathrobes Pierre Robert. And we'll play some more music concerning sleep in our next broadcast. Of course, the show happens twice a week, Mondays and Fridays, 10 to 12 in the morning. Well, we still have some potential guests coming in this morning, some live guests. It's kind of nasty weather this morning, and most of the folks, as you may have heard me mention in the voiceover earlier, are at David Dumas' sentencing hearing, or at least that's where they were headed around 8 o'clock this morning. David Dumars, or BD, as you may know if you've been following this show, is a homeless activist who got royally reamed in the police harassment activities of early 1994, right before the downtown ordinances made it into print. Those are the laws that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk or to ask peacefully for spare change at night, let's say, or to have a table on the mall at night for demonstration purposes. All these things are now barred, thanks to our jolly merchants in downtown Santa Cruz and their pals on the city council. And BD, David Dumars, was an opponent of this, and he was attacked for it. He was even, in fact, pepper gassed when he protested the dismantling of a homeless vigil. And that case took 2 years, and we're going to find out the outcome of that this morning. He's actually, I think he's being threatened with 30 to 90 days for... he was convicted of writing on a Sentinel news box, "The New World Order has a Third Reich odor." It's kind of hard to say fast, but it has a nice ring to it. We've got lots of tapes today, lots of kind of scattered interviews from last month at the Sleep Out at City Hall, plus some relatively recent stuff within the last week. We also had a seminar lecture this weekend from homeless activist Jane Hagstrom, actually no longer a homeless activist. Now she's a head of the psychiatric department up at Alta Bates in Berkeley, a hospital. I will try not to hold that against her because she was also a very good homeless activist during the 80s in Santa Barbara, and she agreed to come to town to talk to us about how the sleeping ban was broken, at least for a period of time in Santa Barbara. And we had a kind of a brief talk about that out at City Hall on Saturday when many folks were out of town. And we recorded the whole thing, and we're going to not be playing it today. We may do a selection or two today. It was a pretty long ordeal. Ordeal is a little hefty. No, it was actually, she's a very very articulate speaker, and she's interesting to listen to. That is available, though, for those who want to hear it, and you should give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4832, in case you want to hear that full tape of the Jane Hagstrom, How They Broke the Sleeping Ban in Santa Barbara. And I will be giving a brief summary, as I actually already have in past shows, as to how the ordinance against sleeping outside for homeless people was successfully forced into a change in Santa Barbara in 1986. Well, let's roll right into some street interviews. Before we do, I want to say if you're outside now, or even if you're not outside but near the outside, you can hear the rain dropping. And as I went to Taco Bell this morning, which is where I go to pick up people who want to be on the show, I invited several folks from that place to come over and talk about what it's like to be outside in the rain, because that's the best way to know what's cooking with the homeless situation on the streets, is talk to people who are in it. And the general situation is the armory is closed. That's the word, from these three men anyway. And folks are scrambling for places to stay, here and there, looking for safe spots. And we're also, as I said, going to have a report from beggarbacker Becky Johnson, who's a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Apparently she's reestablished herself on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. She was the only member of that board to strongly dissent from their decisions around Community House and the campground. She She actually spoke to city council about the need for campground space and the relative, well, perhaps she wouldn't have used this word, stupidity, foolishness, ineffectiveness of building a community house trailer project for 40 people on an area that had facilitated 200 to 300 campers and now is no more. Let's put it this way, it is, but it's locked off. It's got some administrative trailers sitting on the middle of it and signs on the fences all around it. Thank you, Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So let's listen to a few tapes, and you can always call in and interrupt the flow of the show with your own thoughts, and we'll get into those in a moment as well. If you call in, we'll stop. We've got some newspaper clippings we're also going to turn to. But first, let's review what has been happening down on the mall. This is last Friday afternoon after the last show.
Radio Santa Cruz, how's the knife sharpening business going? Sorry to catch you in the middle of a chew here. We've got a nice big red van, a friendly looking dog that says beware of dog. Will he bite me if I pet him?
Not when I'm here.
Cool. Hey, big pup. Yes. Yeah. So what kind of a dog is this?
German Rottweiler.
And what is his name or her name?
Dracomedet vom Deck.
Say it again?
Dracomedet vom Deck.
And if I were, does she or he have a shortened version?
Sure, Dracomedet is German for buddy.
Yeah.
Vom is from, and Dak is his father.
I see.
It's buddy from Dak.
Dracomedet vom Deck.
Mm-hmm.
Hey there, Dracomedet vom Deck. So are you the first knife sharpener I've ever seen on the mall?
And it's free, it's not a business.
Is this your trade? Have you been doing this for a long time? Or?
No, I'm a carpenter, it's a hobby. I just come down and do this because I think that, you know, everybody out here is asking for something. Give me a buck, give me this, give me that. This is a free service for the people of Santa Cruz. Somebody wants their knife sharpened, I'm happy to do it.
That's great.
Propaganda?
Sure. Always. Thank you.
I'm okay.
Yeah, we're on the line. We're interrupting our Friday on the Mall interviews to talk to perennial jailbird Sean Alimi. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, Santa Cruz.
And Sean, you're calling in from the Santa Cruz County Jail.
Yeah, Ward A, to be exactly. A is for apple.
Really?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Uh-huh.
So how are things going over there?
Well, it's wet outside. Actually, you probably got more comfortable accommodations than the people who got tickets last night. There were two tickets. I guess actually one ticket and one woman went to jail.
Which woman?
Sandy, I believe.
Really?
From the City Hall sleepout. Robert Flory got a ticket, and Sandy went to the big house. But apparently not as deep into the big house as you, because they've got you upstairs in your orange jumpsuit.
Yeah, I'm real cute in this thing, too. I look cute. Everybody tells me that. Anyway,
you getting tired of that, or are you enjoying yourself in jail?
Actually, it's not. If you're homeless, this probably could be an awesome, cozy little place.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest everybody should come downtown, not downtown, to City Hall, get arrested, come in here for 3-4 days, and then you're not homeless. Then you have a place to stay. They feed you 3 meals a day. Let's see, what else? There's TV here, cable. Man, I'm telling you, this is...
The reason you're behind bars, of course, is because you've been participating in what is now a 32-day-old sleepout at City Hall, protesting the fact that there is a law that makes it illegal for people to sleep outside and that there is no legal campground. Is that right?
Correct. The whole thing, the way it got started, is I received a ticket and I realized what the laws are about. People forget human and constitutional rights, guarantees, I should say. It used to be guarantees, but the guarantees are void now. It's like they're outdated, We're mm-hmm. all going to get together and see if we can reconstitute those common and human rights again.
Now, are you expecting to come out today, or do you think...
I have no idea. You know what? Like last weekend when they arrested me, they didn't file any charges. So I'm waiting to find out what the hell is going to happen this time. They're not giving me any information. They didn't give me any type of paperwork if I was being arrested under any of the laws, camping laws or anything like that. They just put me in here. So. today.
Well,
I'm not even sure if there's a bail. I requested it three times and one time in writing. They still haven't written me back yet.
Really? Well, I think there is bail. I called in on Friday and found that you had, I think it's 500 and something. There are two camping tickets, 6.3, 6.010, which is, of course, the sleeping ordinance and infraction. It makes it illegal to sleep. I think it was sleeping. They actually got you asleep, is what they claim.
I wasn't asleep at all. I heard him come in. I was actually sitting at a time.
Maybe it was bedding, but I think that they may have. The point is, they've cited you under two infraction ordinances that aren't usually used to put someone in jail, you know, and it's last time at least, which was last weekend when you were also in jail, you were cited under a law that at least was a misdemeanor, which is the sleep twice in 48 hours, go to jail law. But this time, it looks like they aren't even doing that, and they're just throwing you in jail on infraction charges, and I think they want to remove you, Sean, and make it difficult for you, and also frighten you.
Frighten me? This is great here, man, I'm telling you. As I said, you know, I suggest it's not half as bad as they make it sound. Maybe for some people, because if they don't have their mind set, this could be an emotional trip. But if you have your mind set to upset these laws, which they're unconstitutional and they're against the human rights, please come down to City Hall and let's get arrested. Let the city know that you're not willing to put up with such unjust laws. And these laws were never tested in court, whether they violate any human or constitutional rights. And I think it's pretty pathetic. Nobody's done anything about it in such a long time, which now they think is their right. You know, freedom of speech, freedom of sleep. What a concept, you know?
Yep. I have to commend your approach. Anything you want to add before I move along here?
Just basically requesting people to support what we're doing and come down, help us out, bring some hot coffee for the people who are in the outside world. We need more blankets because they keep confiscating the blankets.
Yeah, they confiscated Robert Flory's last night again.
Again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez, don't I get tired?
Well, it's a form in my mind of really a low-grade form of torture when you take away people. Actually, not so low-grade when people have only a blanket against the cold and the wet.
Well, let's put it this way: in a city which is so adverse and is so they're so up and witty and with the programs and this and that, I have become a political prisoner.
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
That is so hilarious. I mean, for what? For sleeping?
Yep, apparently so, Sean.
I mean, I'm serious. I mean, because to my opinion, sleeping is a freedom, is a form of freedom of being.
Yeah, but it's not a matter of sleeping. It's where you're sleeping.
So I'm gonna actually have our guest here start commenting on your thoughts, but.
Okay. Well, I wish I could. I heard what it said. You're correct about where you're sleeping. As long as, to my opinion, I'm working on sovereignty. To my opinion, as long as you're not trespassing on anybody's property, on a personal property, for individual basis, and or. You're trespassing in, or you're not damaging anybody, or you're not disrespecting the area which you're in. You should be okay with it. I mean, it's called being a nomad. Okay, this country was based on nomads, which traveled and they set up base, and now they're telling us that we cannot be nomads. You cannot go to the beaches and sleep. You cannot go there to sleep. You cannot do that, and you cannot do that. What's next? We can't breathe. We can't.
God, don't worry about sleep.
I didn't hear that.
You want to speak up?
Yeah, you want me to speak?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, I've never done this before. This is kind of new to me.
Sure.
But it's very interesting looking at this thing here. But see, it's not a question of. You're sleeping. It's a question of where you're sleeping. We got the whole we got the whole Pognip, you know, acres and acres and acres and acres of the Pognip up here. Myself, I camp down by the river. I got three camping tickets, but over the last, they busted me day before yesterday on my, because I just refused to, I knew I was probably going to get busted, stand on my ground, but I made a decision, you know, about a week ago, I was just not going to back down anymore. I just stand my ground, take whatever comes. So I stood my ground, and I got busted on my camping warrants, but I only did 5 hours. I mean, they gave me a court date and let me out. And they gave me a ham and cheese sandwich while I was in there. They played good guy, bad guy, but.
Well, you're lucky you got fed, because they didn't even feed me. They brought me in, and the first meal I got wasn't even breakfast. That was approximately 11 hours later. Actually, 11 and a half hours.
Yeah, I got fed within 2 hours of being there.
You're lucky, because I think they're trying to make it really hard on me.
But I've seen that before. I mean, when I was in jail a year ago, for 2 days, the prisoners commented on how the quality of food somehow got a lot better, you know, in those 2 days that I was there. I mean, we had things like burritos at night and eggs in the morning. We had good food. And, of course, after I left, I never went back. I couldn't recheck it, but they just said, you know, that it was unusual. They commented it was unusual how good the food was. But I think they're giving, you know, preferential treatment. The people they don't like, they're trying to harass, and the people they like, you know, they do extra favors for them.
Contrary, we're not harassing anybody. They're harassing us. They're harassing us for trying to sleep. They're harassing us. They send.
No, no. What I'm saying is that you know, they didn't feed you for 11 hours because they don't like you. They're giving preferential treatment. They're treating some people one way and other people another way. They're not treating everybody equally.
I got it.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, since you've been here, you know it's not half as bad as people say.
Yeah, jail's a pretty damn good place if you're homeless. I mean, it's dry, you got a bed to sleep on, you got people to talk to, you always make connections.
You got a TV,
and a lot of times people have chess sets. When I was in there, somebody had a chess set, I got to play chess. We played poker, I had a damn good time, and I got to quit smoking. I started back as soon as I got out.
Actually,
but for 3 days, I didn't smoke.
Actually, I'm playing dominoes with three or four of the gentlemen, some of the inmates here, and I'm whooping their butt, and they're fun. They're having fun. As a matter of fact, I got one of them smiling right in front of me, going, "Yeah." I whoop their butt, and they might even like it, and they do.
Anyway. All right, Sean, we're going to let you get back to your domino game, you old geezer, you.
Actually, I'm watching TV right now.
Uh-oh.
I'm telling you, to my opinion, again, I'm promoting something, okay? Please come down and support us, Coalition for the Homeless People. Let's call it, let's give it a name one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
Call it CHOPS or something like that. Coalition for Homeless Chips, or let's create.
We'll work on a name.
Come down and sleep out at the city hall and help us out to possibly get this sleeping ban lifted.
It sounds good, Sean.
Yeah.
I can't disagree with you. As times get rough, we hope more people will join in and. I guess we'll hopefully see you tomorrow, one way or another.
Yeah, supposedly they're either going to release me this afternoon, like they did last time, without filing anything,
mm-hmm.
or if they're going to file anything, I'm going to be arraigned either this afternoon, which they're not going to do Santa Cruz anymore, or tomorrow morning. But they still haven't given me any information as far as bail goes.
Yeah, it's about 500. It's two charges. Of course, unless they've changed it, that's what I heard.
Yeah,
when I told them.
You and I both know they always do that. They try to set example.
Well, you're a bad example, Sean.
I'm telling you, I'm becoming unrehabilitable.
But we'll talk to you when you get out.
Okie dokie.
Thanks, Sean.
Take it easy.
And that was Sean Alamy from the bowels of the Santa Cruz County Jail. With us in the studio, we have...
My street name is Robin Hood, but I suffer from multiple personalities, about nine of them. If you listen real close, you can hear the different ones. You can hear the different ones come on, but you got to be real sharp. But it's a long story. I don't know where to begin, but... I know the awful lot of strange things that happen, particularly me.
Let me ask you this. What should we call you? What's a good name to call you?
Just call me...
Robin Hood?
Well, I think it's a reincarnation of Rockefeller.
Which would you prefer?
Robin Hood.
We'll call you Robin Hood. Robin, let me ask you this. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
About 3 years.
And is it any different than it was when you arrived?
Yeah, well, when I arrived, I stayed with my mother. I came down to look after my mother. I did that for a year until they put her in a rest home. But I was living with my mother in a mental health system. And then I went to Jesse Street until I couldn't deal with that anymore. And then I went to stay at a back 40, and then I went to the woods. But most of my time, I've been living in the woods.
Now, how long were you in the back 40?
I was there about 2 weeks.
And how this was like in last December?
A year ago.
About a year ago.
Yeah, and I was there the last 3 days before they shut it down.
Now, what did you feel about the back 40? Some people claimed it was a bad place. Some people claimed it was made uninhabitable. Others said that it could have weathered the winter. What do you think?
Well, it might have weathered the winter, but most of the people didn't have tents good enough for, that big storm that came through wiped out about half of them. They just didn't have, the quality of their tents. We didn't have enough plastic to put over the tops of the tents. We just weren't really prepared for the storm. Mm-hmm. But I think there was a real good sense of community developing there. Toward the end, I mean, we lost two or three people. They overdosed. I mean, they killed them. The police started to come in more and more. But the thing that I didn't like, I mean, when those TV cameras came, they came with all the cameras. They weren't interviewing or taking pictures or trying to understand what was going on. All they wanted to do was take a picture of the goddamn toilet.
Yeah, that's true. Although the toilet facilities were pretty bad considering what they had, two or three porta-potties for hundreds and hundreds of people.
Well, I think maybe there were maybe 50, I don't know how many tents, but maybe there were 50 or 60 tents there, maybe two people to a tent. So say there were 60 tents, say 70 tents. That's a lot of tents in that area. Say there were 70 tents, two people to a tent, that's 140 people.
Yeah, I counted 98 in early December.
But they kept talking about 200. See, the thing is when you're,
But in any case, you were there for the last 3 days.
Yeah, I was there for the last 3 days because I wanted to get in on a sense of community. We were sitting around a campfire, and we got to talk, and it was a lot more interesting than being by myself on the river. It was more interesting having other people to talk to. So the last 3 nights that it was there, one of the fellows let me use one of his tents. He had a couple of tents there, and he let me, each night he found a tent for me to sleep in.
And Robin, you didn't go into the armory after that, right?
No, after that, it developed into a very interesting, intriguing story. This guy, Doug, who was at the back 40 when I was there the first time for 2 weeks, he was into watercolor, and we camped right next to each other. And the day they shut down the back 40, I was over at the mission getting lunch, and he met me over there. And I had three bottles of vodka in my pack. I was taking them over to give to the guy that had let me use his tent. And anyway, I met him, and I knew he was into a vodka, so I gave him a bottle, and he invited me to come over and stay with him. And so I did that. He had a real good setup. This girl, Marilyn, his girlfriend, she works her butt off and pays everything. $850 is all she gets, $800 goes for the rent. And a long story.
You were indoors?
Yeah, indoors. It's in a house. I had my own bedroom. I had my own bed, and the family dog always came. And it used to be the kid's bedroom, and dog came and slept on my bed. That's when I got into talking to animals. But anyway, I stayed there a couple of weeks, and they're pretty nice. Things got along okay. And then Marilyn is an artist, and, it was Christmas. I was there on Christmas, and I smoke a lot of cannabis as a substitute medication for Haldol for my schizophrenia and also for glaucoma. And it just makes my brain function better. I don't know why, but it does. But anyway, I was there Christmas, and they went away for Christmas Day to their parents. And I had lost my pipe, so I was using an aluminum pipe, and little holes got jammed up. So I was looking for a pin to clean out the holes, and I wandered into their bedroom, and, I forgot to tell you something. There's another story. Well, anyway, I wandered into their bedroom looking for a pin, and on the dresser I found a stained glass box that had been ripped off from my campsite a year ago when I was at the back 40.
So you felt you'd found the people who had been...
Well, I found a stained glass box. I found it on his dresser.
Right.
And
does it upset you?
It upset me dramatically because I had it on a little altar. When I camped at the back 40 originally for the 2 weeks, I mean, nobody stole for anybody else because everybody knew whatever they had, that's all they had. And it just wasn't any stealing going on. Maybe a little food or food stamps once in a while, but personal things were never taken from anybody. So you felt I had it sitting right on top of a little dresser. I just had it displayed there.
and it disappeared. When I went to pack to go to the ridge, it just wasn't there. Somebody had taken it, but I didn't worry about it. Mm-hmm.
You were shocked to find it.
I was definitely shocked to find it in his bedroom. And at that point, that house, I mean, they ain't thrown away nothing in 20 years. That thing's got over 100 boxes in it, little wooden boxes. And I went through every box in that whole building and took whatever was any value in any of those boxes. And half the stuff went to the people at the back 40 for Christmas presents. The other half the stuff went to Pond's Tree Hollow. And the next day, somebody hit Pond's Tree Hollow and got my half. So I didn't get anything out of it, but... the kids at the back 40 got some stuff, but there was some pretty nice stuff there.
So you were in lodging, and then you were out of lodging pretty quick. So where have you been the last 3 months?
Oh, well, see, they never realized, because I didn't take anything that was noticeable, except a little brass gavel that came out of one of the glass cabins. They noticed that missing. But everything else I took was out of little boxes, and everything is stacked up and left there, and they never go into any of them. I didn't know anything was missing except that gavel.
Did you move after this?
No, I stayed there. And when they came home, I mentioned that I had been to visit my mother, and I stopped in at the stained glass shop down the corner. And they said, Marion said, are you into stained glass? I said, yeah, I used to make stained glass boxes. And they said, I got one of those. And he went in his room, and he brought out my stained glass box. And he said... yeah, I found this in a ditch in a mud at the back 40, and I said, yeah, I made that thing. He said something, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he said he found it in the dirt somewhere and cleaned it all up. And I said, yeah.
Did he give it back to you?
Yeah, he gave it back to me at that point. Mm-hmm. And he said that, I don't remember exactly what was said.
But then you stayed on for a while.
I stayed on there, yeah, I stayed on there. And they wanted me to get into making stained glass boxes because... They felt they could make some money on them, and I said, "Look, I've already tried twice to go in stained glass business, and both times I got wiped out from the system, and I just don't want to do it again." And they said, "Well, you can do it. You make really nice boxes. I'm sure you can do it."
Let's interrupt this for a minute, Robin. We got an incoming call here.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Hi, Becky.
Hello to you, and hello to Robin Hood.
Hey, Robin. Becky says hello.
Oh, hello, Becky.
Hi, Robin.
So, you want to, I guess you had a report you were going to give us. Do you want to comment on something that Robin and I were discussing?
Robin just highlights how difficult it is and what kind of... troubles that homeless people go through just to try to have an ordinary life. It's not the same as for homed people.
Mm-hmm. So, but you've been a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless since August, and then...
And a newsflash, I am a member.
Uh-oh, you mean you, in spite of your opposition to Paulie's policies?
After the meeting on Thursday, and the executive committee had met briefly, and they approved my membership.
We should kind of brief people who aren't aware of this, that you had been on the committee before, but then you'd begun to question some of the policies of the Citizens Committee involving the campground and the community house project and the process by which they were proceeding, for example, such as allowing people to tape record their meetings, let's say, and having open meetings.
Yeah, that was one of my objections, was that I felt that the one meeting a month that they had that was deemed an open meeting, that they were excluding the press, they were not allowing tape recording, that I had come in with a video camera and they wouldn't allow me to tape, and then they were saying that they were concerned how these recordings would be used.
They didn't like the fact that I might use them, for example, on this radio show.
Yeah, that was a sentiment expressed by Daryl Darling, that it wasn't the act of recording that bothered him, it was how you used the recordings was his objection.
Hmm. Well, I always found that sort of a specious argument. If you really misrepresent someone on the air, that's a form of slander, and it's legally actionable. If you otherwise, usually the remedy for bad speech is more free speech, and you simply, you respond to bad speech mm-hmm. by clarifying the situation. The problem with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is they have got nothing they can clarify because they broke their word to the campers, they closed down the campground, they're putting in a campground for 40 people and eliminating one for 200. You know, they've got nothing to stand on, and they know
They were also concerned how I would use my videotapes and that they actually wanted to have some sort of pre-control over how I would use them, which definitely object to as a journalist. I don't do that for anyone I interview. Give them authority over how I would use that. And as you stated, there are laws.
So they had objections then. They started raising the objection that you had never really been a member because somewhere down the line you'd not filed the proper papers.
It wasn't me. It was...
Paul Lee.
It was the members of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless who had not processed the paperwork in a timely manner.
Oh, this sounds to me preposterous. And what it seems to have done is you were in the midst of certain significant challenges to the Citizens Committee. You were suggesting that they should... allow people to tape record, that they should have open meetings.
The one open meeting a month, the executive committee meets maybe several times a month, and those meetings are closed.
Mm-hmm.
So they certainly have ample opportunity to work things out in private before,
one might say too much opportunity.
Maybe you might say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was
but the fact is
necessary for CCH to... that as a policy matter, they should have that one meeting open to the public
the fact is that your attempt to challenge these policies received a significant hit of speed bump here.
Yeah.
And now you've been spending all your time arguing as to whether you're even a member of the committee, and I think you're back where you started like a month and a half ago. Has there been any change in their policies? Are people allowed to tape record their so-called public meetings? Are people allowed to attend without threat of arrest?
Not at this current time.
I didn't think so. So we have no progress, but you at least have been assured with your... After all, you are a very valuable member of the board. You put in literally, I don't know how many, I don't want to say hours, tens of hours, hundreds of hours of labor contacting Ray McMinn, the only homeless member on the board of directors, who's currently in jail in Virginia, trying to raise funds for him. Ray's donated $10,000 to CCH, the Community Garden Project.
You know that Ray McMinn donated $10,000 to the Homeless Garden Project, and the Sentinel never even reported it.
Yeah, but we did hear on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
That's correct.
Yes.
Good old Free Radio.
But, frankly, I'm becoming more and more bored with CCH. I mean, I think they should be ousted from their position of power as monopoly service providers, but... having already taken it on the chops, you know, when I go into their committee meetings and they arrest me, and then we get a fellow activist Sherry Connable praising them for their decisions, that's what happened in in January when I was in there attempting to attend a meeting. They twice called the cops, and Sherry Connable went through a long number where she said, "Oh, I support what you're doing. I'm not connected with Robert Norris." Blah blah blah. I find myself thinking that we don't have really the luxury of spending a lot of time on these people. I mean, they indeed need to be criticized, and we've criticized them aplenty, and we'll continue to do so. But I guess my real interest in talking to you today is you talked to the head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, who's also the chief enforcer of CCH, pardonnez-moi, Paul Merceau.
I'm going to step out now. Sure.
Who ran the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program when it actually was a program. Now it's been reduced, I guess, to 56 people, and there's no winter armory shelter, and there's no campground, and all there is this boondoggle community house project, which is, setting up its hooks into some SSI checks that'll be coming down the pike to feed its hungry members. I hear Daryl Darling is going to be paid $80,000 a year. Is that the latest on some sort of... Is that true?
I'm not aware of what Daryl Darling... cut is.
As the community house project. We should call him before we...
The papers that I saw regarding it showed four administrative staff positions, and they were $28,800.
Right. I thought he had a $28,000 position previously. Anyway, whatever amount of money he's getting considering his track record with the homeless, it's too much. And you know, he should return to his bed and breakfast house and make pancakes. Frankly, that's what I think at this particular point. However, let's talk about, as I said, what's happening with the Winter Armory shelter and the shelter situation for homeless people in this county. Obviously, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless isn't doing diddly shit. Forgive me for saying so, for the homeless people, other than running this program that the county feeds them money for, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, and of which I guess there are only 56 beds. You talked today to Paul Marceau, the head of this program?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what was the consequence of your conversation? What did you learn?
Well, he said that the armory closed on Friday, that it was open on a weather contingent basis between March 15th and March 30th, and so March 30th was the last
day. That's it
day.
For the armory, right?
Yeah, he says it's closed for the season, but of course we know that Pete Wilson has decided not to continue the armory program, so there's if things stay as they are, the armory will not reopen next winter.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him whether there what sort of shelter arrangements there were for homeless people and he said that there would be 60 positions in the state park program, Sherry Connable and Barbara River Woman's program.
Mm-hmm.
I should say Celia Scott and Catherine Byers as well.
Yeah, they made the Chronicle today, you know. There was an editorial denouncing Catherine Byers by name in the San Francisco Chronicle for the voucher program. The voucher program, for those who are interested, is the program that has Santa Cruz City paying 60 homeless people to go into the state parks and stay there for a week, anything but not in my backyard.
Well, supplementing them, they're supposed to provide, I think it's $10 a week.
Right, they're supplementing the non-existent city campground program, which they were supposed to have found in the last 6 months, but somehow just couldn't find the right rug to look under.
That is the area that I question probably the greatest, that, we can't find a site, we can't find a site.
A site for a campground.
A site for a campground for homeless people. When,
mm-hmm.
when, if you look at this issue from all different sides, given the hubbub that's come from this proposal for the State Parks Program, and the hue and cry that state parks are for recreational facilities and they're not meant to be a permanent shelter for homeless people. Well, then we need a campground specifically for homeless people, given the camping ban ordinances that make it illegal for people to sleep, make it illegal for them to have bedding, or illegal to set up any kind of campsite. We need a campground for homeless people.
No question.
It comes back again and again and again. And when you compare the armory, which is a large indoor shelter program where a person gets a cot and a meal, but no privacy, no permanency, and no real home, and you ask homeless people who have experienced both living in a campground or an armory, which they prefer, the vast majority of homeless people prefer a campground. They have a place to be 24 hours a day. They are far more able to get their lives in order, get employment, get a good night's sleep, that sort of thing, in a campground. And a campground is fairly inexpensive to operate. I know that CCH claims that they're $60,000 in debt from the open-air shelter, from having operated that for 2 years, which is probably true. However, I'm not sure if that was the actual cost of operating. It was $60,000 for 2 years, but providing a place for 150 to 200 people to stay for 2 years at the cost of $60,000 sounds like a bargain to me.
Oh yeah, no question. Well, Did Paul have anything further to say to you this morning when you spoke to him?
Well, I asked him if about the camping ban laws in particular. He wanted to know how many camping ban tickets are written, in a given night. And I told him it was fairly extensive, not counting the City Hall tickets that are written. I said I didn't know exactly.
You might want to do some more inquiry before
that,
you
that
do
that. That might have been, you know, his particular beat where he was at. That he said that he wrote 3 to 4.
You know, but we are hearing of camping tickets. I mean, he just heard it from Robin Hood. You know, mm-hmm. that it's have. You know, I've heard it from other people. I mean, you'll hear
that
it.
They tracked him down in the Poganip down by the river. I mean, they went out of their way.
There are tickets happening. You know, these guys. It's a blood sport to them to some extent. Particularly Parks and Rec Rangers. They enjoy it.
They get on horseback and they drive around the Poganip. Yeah,
it's their idea of a good time. In fact, some people do it off duty just for the hell of it. Or at least they used to under Norman Levy. When he was the head ranger.
Well, it's the idea that the police force is kind of like a suburban guerrilla squad or something, you know, that it's kind of an us versus them.
Did Paul Meursault suggest that, not that I have any praise at all for the Citizens Committee for opposing the sleeping ban, I think it's the utmost hypocrisy for the Citizens Committee to make pious statements about the sleeping ban and throw out 200 people from the homeless campground in violation of promises to those people. But what did he say about the sleeping ban?
He said that he thought that there was a possibility of getting some movement from the city council in some sort of modification of the camping ban laws so that they would not be so harshly enforced against homeless people.
Did he give you any indication of how he believed this or what specific kind of reform he thought was possible?
He did not specifically state that. He wanted to know what the scope of it was,
mm-hmm.
and I agree that that's information we should find out.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him if he'd be willing to come and testify at these trials of people who are being arrested for sleeping,
mm-hmm.
to testify that there's a lack of shelter space.
Arraignments start tomorrow, yeah.
And he was highly amused that that was necessary for anyone to testify. He thought it was just common knowledge that there is not sufficient shelter space for homeless people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks to him. Yeah, he's one of the reasons that there's not sufficient shelter space for homeless people. So, anything else did you learn from Pardonnez-moi Paul, as I used to call him in jest?
We did talk about a few other issues, and he was actually the one that told me that the executive committee had voted to retain. I'm not sure whether they retained my membership or approved it initially.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to find out about that.
I find the whole thing completely irrelevant and ridiculous, and obviously has served to divert your attention from the issues you were raising before. And now you had to spend your time defending your own status. You know, you essentially lost all the time and all the ground you had when you were bringing up significant issues, and I suspect now you feel even less inclined to bring up those issues for fear you're going to be attacked for them as a member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
I don't know about that.
I hope not.
I do try to come from a point of view of cooperation and
You can cooperate with a bunch of fascist-minded individuals such as acted in the last three committee meetings toward other homeless activists. I cannot understand. I can't understand how anybody could cooperate with that kind of a committee and maintain their conscience and self-respect, but perhaps I lack your perspective on this.
My attitude is that, first off, the heart of democracy is persuasion. And if people are holding a point of view that I disagree with, I feel it's my responsibility to attempt to persuade them with facts and evidence and rational reasoning and get them to move in the direction that I...
But you aren't persuading them. All you've been doing is persuading them that you can stay on the committee. You've adduced no new arguments to give them about how they have miserably failed homeless people, how they have lied to them, how they have backed negotiating agents who lied to them, how they then have excluded homeless activists who had the temerity to protest that action. I don't think you brought up these issues again in the last 2 months, have you?
The last 2 months?
Well,
in the last two meetings.
In the last two meetings or any time between the last two meetings. You have not discussed these issues with any members of the board, have you?
Well, at that one meeting, I did say that I felt that the meeting should be open to the public, open to the
media. Think you changed any minds?
Not so far.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why I think you're engaging in something else is happening here that has nothing to do with any kind of effective arguments. I think you are concerned about something else, and I don't quite know what that is, but it obviously has nothing to do with effective argument in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, because there is no effective argument in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless at the moment. I mean, you're talking to yourself, and you're talking to those of us, of course, who hear you in spite of the fact that you're on the Citizens Committee. But, you speak very well no matter what you say. We all know that, and so I want to commend you for that. And is there more you wish to add about the infamous Palmer so-call? I literally cannot bring myself to talk to the guy. I find him, his abusive behavior toward me personally, I suppose I should take a less personal view, but it really feels harsh. I don't like having police called on me twice. I don't like being maligned in print with a series of lies by someone who is in fact an interested party and yet who sets himself up as an impartial judge. And we're talking about my complaint to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that they kicked me out of their meetings because I tried to draw the attention of malfeasance by two employees to the board, and of course one of the employees is Paul Merceau, and who is the person delegated to write back a response to me? Paul Merceau. You know, I mean, it's kind of amusing, but it's not, for some reason I don't find it funny. Perhaps I
need to... Well, there's no love between you and Paul Merceau or Paul Lee.
It's not a question of love. I am not engaging in abusive behavior toward these individuals.
It's gotten to the point where none of you can be rational with each other anymore.
I don't think that's true. I don't think what I have said is irrational. I think that I've made a number of pungent, serious criticisms of what they've done, but they are in no way irrational criticisms. They are quite rational. And the point is...
I agree.
Yeah, so why are you saying that none of us can be rational? What are you talking about?
I'm just saying because of pre-existing attitudes that are legitimate or not, I don't know, between yourself and Paul Lee and Paul Merceau, that you've reached an impasse. It's a Mexican standoff.
There's no pre-existing attitudes. I was completely neutral in my response to Paul Merceau. Paul Merceau proved himself by doing what he did, and you in fact agree with me that he betrayed the people that he was committed to support.
I thought that the campground was closed down prematurely, that the idea that it was closed down because of weather was a false issue. I feel that the real reason that the campground was closed was to make room for Community House.
Mm-hmm.
I also agree that the campground was poorly managed by Citizens Committee for Homeless.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that the solution in my mind is to have a campground, to find a site and set up a campground for homeless people somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Coral Street site for a campground. There are many problems associated with it. There are better sites. I don't know why the city council keeps turning down these better sites, but...
We kind of run around this one so many times that you get dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have anything new to add to it, or should we sort of leave it dangling in the wind until people either reoccupy the Coral Street site, reoccupy some other site, or maybe confiscate the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's property and use it for homeless use, which I think would be an excellent use of its property?
Well, I don't know about that, Robert.
You don't think so? I don't know. I mean, you know...
And I have objections about some of the requirements for the people that are going to be occupying Community House, and that the way that they're treated is though that they were criminals in a halfway house.
I
don't think that's reasonable.
Every time you look at
homeless people.
Every time you look at CCH, it gets worse. That's the problem. And frankly... I kind of tire of even talking about them because until we decide we want to do something about these people and take some significant strong action, it sounds a little bit like we're bickering and niggling and naggling and who cares. And frankly, I get tired of hearing it because I've said it so many times, as have you. You've repeated the same story on this show at least
mm-hmm.
half a dozen times. So anything new that we should add to this before we move on to some refreshing conversation from the Friendship Corner at Cathcart and Pacific?
Well, I did talk to Ray McMinn 2 days ago.
Yes.
And
Ray is one of the homeless, token homeless folks put onto the Citizens Committee for the Homeless by the CCH several years ago as part of the Homeless Garden Project, and who's been kidnapped to Virginia, where he's been held on some preposterous charge for, you know, stealing $8, was that what it was?
25 years ago.
I mean, the whole thing is, again, been repeated ad infinitum, and it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, or one of them anyway. And now he's on the edge of getting out, and he's gotten some money, and he's given it back to his old pals in the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Well, that's nice for you guys. And I hope he gets out.
Well, it was earmarked for the Homeless Garden Project, which he has a great deal of love for.
Right, right.
And the word from Sacramento finally got his paperwork from Virginia, and it's in their computer. And
he's trying to get his parole transferred over here to California.
That's correct, because Virginia Parole Board has ruled that he's rehabilitated.
Mm-hmm.
That was their
right
conclusion. And so we anticipate that, just based upon what they told us, this particular time, that he should be back in about 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds good. Maybe he can, I don't know what he'll do when he gets back, but I guess we could certainly interview him on the radio and see what he has to say about all this stuff. And, hey, we'll do that when he returns. Anything else? Anything additional to this new intelligence?
No, I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Becky. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that was Becky Johnson, newly reinstalled Citizens Committee for the Homeless member, who has also been almost in a single-handed campaign getting Ray McMinn out of the dungeons in Virginia and back on track in California. There are several people in this community who owe a debt of thanks to Becky more than they know. She is a tireless worker. Let's turn now again. Let's get back onto the tapes so I can take a breather myself. And here's some stuff from Friday on the Mall. Some interesting stuff. Conversations with merchants, by that I mean street merchants. Conversations with other folks on the street. And then an interesting interaction with two police sergeants.
For Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah.
We shall return to the knife sharpening in just a moment.
All right. I'll be here.
Great. So now it's about 20 to 2 on the 29th, I guess. Is it the 29th? Yes, it is. The 29th of March on Friday at the Friendship Corner. I'm talking to
Patrick Kutch.
And Patrick, you just handed me a green flyer which says, "Because we say so." And I'll read the flyer aloud, and I'll ask you to comment on it. Is this the type of attitude you want your local coffee house to have? Granted, they reserve the right to refuse service to anyone for any reason, but is it the right for the owner of a local business to tell people how they must live their lives? Priscilla Ma, the manager of Cafe Pergolisi, has recently begun refusing to sell coffee or other caffeinated products to a pregnant customer, Tasha Panuto, on the unfounded belief that a caffeine has a detrimental effect on unborn fetuses. Shortly after the Metro Santa Cruz ran their article, is there a Surgeon General in the house, a derogatory posting on one of the Pergolisi tip jars, apparently bearing the title Top 10 Reasons Pregnant Women Shouldn't Drink Coffee. Among the listed reasons were Ritalin is just too expensive, we don't need any more Type A personalities, and the worst of all, their number one reason, because we say so. We, a group of former Pergolisi regulars, invite you to join us in boycotting Cafe Pergolisi. There are many other quality coffee houses in the area, ones that don't attempt to enforce their own views or proper health values upon their patrons. So, what's this all about?
A friend of mine is pregnant, and one day the Pergolisi staff had a meeting telling them that they would no longer serve her any caffeinated drinks or anything with caffeine in it. So, therefore, she went to the Metro Santa Cruz, they printed an article which made Priscilla look rather stupid, and then Priscilla had the gall to post a rather insidious and derogatory statement on the tip jar that was offensive to just about everyone who read it. It's absolutely ridiculous that anyone would try to tell anyone else how to raise their young or how to live their life, and Santa Cruz business merchants should just stay out of that.
So,
your feeling is that, and her feeling, I suppose, the woman who was denied the coffee?
Yes.
Is that if a woman is pregnant and wants to, let's say, drink wine or coffee or do whatever, those are her choices which she should be able to make.
Exactly. It's whatever you want to do. I'm not saying that something like crack or something like that is a viable option, but I mean, it's quoted here in the Metro Santa Cruz by Dr. Raitu Meister. There is absolutely no evidence in any scientific literature that has found any relationship between caffeine and birth defects or growth retardation, and a fair number of studies on this are fairly conclusive.
So have you presented this information to the management of the Cafe Pergolese?
We dropped a flyer off there last evening.
Have you actually had a face-to-face discussion on this?
No.
Because that might be one way to go as well, because you could have your position firmly and then state that, in all fairness, we wanted to talk to you first and see what your opinion is on this.
Exactly. Well, Priscilla is a rather stubborn woman, so trying
to get her to go in is not... But you, on the other hand, are your own man. You could go and talk to them independently.
Exactly.
So if you do, I'd like to hear what they have to say.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. But, a crystal displayer here. Your name, sir?
My name is Bill.
And Bill, you're seated across from a sock shop and shoe company here at Friendship Corner. You're seated on a planter. Check in. You've got some incense there and some little water drinking. And you got a display of crystals. Any problems with the cops?
No, not yet.
How long have you been doing this?
I've done it for a couple of months, a couple of years.
Here in town, in Santa Cruz?
No, a couple of months, yeah.
And have you had any difficulties, any problems with the police?
Just like, usually they'll come by. Yeah, I know. They usually just, come by one time and say to pack it up. And then if they come by again, they'll confiscate it.
And has this happened to you recently?
No.
And have the police, and the host's been by?
Yeah, host's been by today.
And no problem?
Well, he stopped over there and wrote something down.
He wrote, and looking at you, he wrote something down?
Yeah.
Just keeping tabs on you.
Yeah.
Any problems with sleeping outside? Are you a person who sleeps outside?
I sleep in my van.
Any hassles for that?
Just that beach patrol. Those idiots that drive up and down the coast that think they're cops. They're a bunch of idiots, And they ain't bothering nobody. Why don't they go down and, get the heavy drugs or something like that instead of bothering old kids here for not, I know there's shit going on here, but...
Have you been in the city limits or outside city?
Outside city limits.
Anything you want to add for Free Radio Santa?
Just stay cool. See you at the gathering.
Thank you.
All right, brother.
A whole bunch of illicit merchants who are displaying their wares. What's going on here? I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz. I didn't mean to alarm you.
Okay.
Nice looking set of jewelry you've got here.
I'm a disabled vet, man. I'm just trying to trade my wares off, but I ain't. It's
nice looking wares they are, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah, nicely displayed. Any hassles from the cops?
None whatsoever. But not by me, so I haven't seen anybody come by and hassle anybody on the street today, but I figure they might be here at any time. Well, brother, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. How long have you been doing this?
Since 1967, off and on.
Wow. This is not new territory, then, eh?
No, it's not, no.
How about this time? The last couple of days, have you been here consistently, or...?
We came in yesterday morning to visit some friends we have here, and... They told us what was going on, and so we decided to stick around and see what's really going on.
You're Robert Ness, the guy that they put out the political assassin. Don't record
me. I won't, go ahead. Now,
you're the guy that they stagmatized and dramatized my mind after I read that horrible brochure on?
That's the one. I don't know, I'm not sure. There was one flyer out about me... a year and a half ago, I don't know.
No, I just recently got one about Robert Ness and some other guy.
Robert Norris and John Hamilton?
Yeah.
That's an old flyer.
It was good ass white, brother, and it made real good fires, that paper they sent out.
That's a year old, that flyer.
Real good.
They plagued him, I
want to
see that.
To a potential aspiring Chinese American.
My name is Chink Bob Lee, the East Okie Chinaman. It is my primary goal in life to become Chinese.
And you seem to be, you have some wares out here on a Again, it looks like jewelry. It looks like perhaps a Chinese-looking... No, it's not Chinese.
No, a lot of this is Indian and Spanish-American wares. There's things here from South America and from North America. I trade all of them to pay for my cosmetic surgery, for my eye tuck and skin color pigmentation change. And my buck teeth.
I see.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Here's a man who knows what he wants, or else he's having us on. We're not sure, but we'll come back in a few weeks to find out if he's been successful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sergeant Seeley, you're approaching a man with a dog on the mall, a man carrying a dog on the mall, and there seems to be major crime problems here, folks.
Yeah, major crime.
A man with a dog on the mall is getting the attention of two sergeants right here. Dog on the mall ticket, and how many sergeants are doing this? Two sergeants. This shows that Santa Cruz is properly using its police resources. Is it rape? Is it murder? No, it's dog on the mall. And I want you to notice.
Thanks, brother.
Certainly. This man is a very well-dressed, middle-class person who's getting a dog on the mall ticket. There's absolutely no discrimination going on here at all. Notice where he's getting a ticket. Friendship Corner. Two sergeants, folks. Two sergeants giving a dog on the mall ticket. Your taxpayer dollars at work. Check it out, folks. At Santa Cruz, we want to thank Sergeant Seeley and Sanderson for giving a dog on the mall ticket to one of our poorer citizens. Yes. A criminal dog. Probably sleeps at night as well, which, as you know, is illegal in Santa Cruz if you're homeless.
How you doing? Or if you have a home on wheels.
Or if you have a home on wheels.
Which is by choice and not by anything else other than it's by choice.
Exactly so. So you give away brownies. So what's your name?
Alexa.
And Alexa, are you working for a brownie maker? Or?
Mm-hmm. I work for Sundance Sweets Vegan Brownie Company here in Santa Cruz and have for about 3.5 years. And what they consider, I guess, the quote-unquote homeless here. Actually, I don't consider myself homeless. I have a beautiful home on wheels. And as of last night, I was rousted yet once again by the cops. No, I did not. It's interesting because I have lived in this town in my van for over 3 years, and I have never once been ticketed. I find that very weird. I don't know why. I keep knocking on wood for that, but they always just tell me to move along, or they wait for me.
How many times have you been rousted?
Over 3 years, probably over... I mean, dozens of times. I mean, dozens of times.
Just going to a whole new reality on me on that, making a choice of whether you want to live outside or where you want to live, or
exactly.
If you want to live in your car. It's like, I thought that was America. We were allowed to make choice. We have freedom of choice, freedom of words, freedom of speech. It's like, well, I choose to live in the streets. I choose to do what I'm doing. And all of a sudden, now it seems like you really can't choose what you're doing. You're either I'm in redundant slave for society, or you're not going to be anything, basically. And they're going to give you so many fines, they're going to put you in their jails, because that's their biggest army, is those jails, because that's the sickest mentality. They're living some bullshit 1950 mentality, for one. And the biggest issue is everyone has to get their own reality, their own mentality, and just has to do whatever they want to, because this is our body, this is our life, we're living and dying. And it's so weird how they just totally abuse the whole religious factors. Like, they totally plagued everybody with this whole God thing, this whole every-whatever thing. It's like, whatever the fuck ever. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty disappointed myself in the churches of Santa Cruz, because when they passed that law and legislation in Santa Cruz, I believe it was last year, that churches were allowed to do so. I myself have gone to several different churches, and that situation is not available. They don't want it.
The right to sleep on church property.
It's like they made this big, huge deal about it being okay in Santa Cruz now, but yet none of the churches... There's a couple of churches that allow people to slip in every now and then without any baloney, but as far as being a legitimate, you know, having a legitimate stay and a legitimate parking space and a legitimate place to be, it doesn't exist here anymore. And I think that was just a big bureaucratic bullshit. I think it was just all a bunch of bullshit. I have yet to see the churches rally together, have a meeting once a month on what do they want to do, how do they want to control it, what would be their goals in doing that. There's nothing like that around at all, and I'm very disappointed.
So have you... Are you kidding me? What's the ordinance against hacky sack? And he goes, are you kidding me? This is Santa Cruz. There's something against everything. The sergeant just told me that, and I didn't have my fucking tape recorder rolling, but I'm sure you can use the sound bite from Uncle Phil instead.
Yes, this is Phil Free.
I can't believe he fucking said that.
There's no
that was beautiful.
Sacking on the mall?
No hacky sack.
He just said there's an ordinance against it. How the fuck did they pass the hacky sack ordinance? Where was the protest? I didn't even get a flyer. What the fuck? When did that pass, man?
You know what, though? They can pass a city ordinance without even a vote. You voted these people, and these people voted those people in, and they make the decisions. Peace.
Sure. Actually, they need to go through a vote, and they didn't do it, so I think it's full of shit. Were you here when I was making my speeches about the two sergeants? You probably missed that. It was about 10 minutes ago. Thank you, sir. What's your name?
Paul Villa.
Hey. And Paul, what happened to you a moment ago?
I just got a ticket for holding a dog.
What kind of a dog?
It was a little puppy dog, about 3 months old. Right. It wasn't mine, right. But I was holding it, because you're allowed to hold a dog in your lot, because as far as I know, you're allowed to hold a dog in the streets.
Right.
And this guy just gave me a ticket, and I stuck on his car.
Those two sergeants again.
Yeah, those two sergeants came up, and I stuck the ticket right on his car.
Did you lift out the windshield wiper?
I did. It's on the windshield wiper.
So you gave the cop a ticket.
I gave that cop the ticket that he gave me back.
Well, it seems that.
Because I didn't want it.
About his fair play.
I didn't want it there. All right.
What did he say to you? Did he warn you?
No, he just... You know what? I have no warning about that law or nothing. He just gave me that ticket.
Looks like they're doing something down there.
Well, let's go check it out. Let's see what's going on.
Well, let's see what those friendly sergeants are doing something down here now, folks.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. These are recordings on the mall, live with Bathrobes Pierre Robert. That's me. My show is 2 hours every Monday and Friday, and you're in the midst of it right now. If you want to call in, our lines are open, 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's your show and mine. We've had some interesting discussion in the past about the Citizens Police Review Board. The Citizens Police Review Board is the citizen body which supposedly deals with citizen oversight of police. And I'm about to call them now.
Hello, Police Review Board.
Hello, Gary Amane.
Yes.
Gary, this is Robert Norris calling from Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air. How are you doing?
Oh, I've been better.
Well, it's a nasty time for many of us. I'm just recovering from a cold myself, and I'm not quite recovered, so don't kiss me.
I'll try not to.
I know, it's difficult. You have a complaint tracking subcommittee coming up on April 3rd, is that correct?
Let me check the calendar. Yes, 7 to 9 p.m. at Loudon Nelson Center.
Mm-hmm.
Complaint Tracking Process Committee.
Now, can you tell those who are uninformed and who know nothing of these matters just what exactly that is and if and when and how and why they should come to this meeting?
This committee is currently looking at the new Santa Cruz Police Department's general orders on how the police department handles citizen complaints. And there have been several changes in the procedures that the police department uses to... take in a complaint and process it. So people that are interested in how a complaint is filed, how the police department handles a complaint, would be interested in attending these committee meetings.
Mm-hmm. Now, in fact, hasn't the police department decided that it's going to submerge a whole subclass of complaints into a netherland where there will be no review by Citizens Police Review Board because these will no longer be called complaints? They will in fact be called inquiries?
That is correct. They have created a category called an inquiry, which is, in their language, is separate from a complaint. It comes on a different type of form. It doesn't require a signing of a form, and therefore, it does not come in under the jurisdiction of the board for review.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Now, I take it that a number of people on the Citizens Police Review Board have some concern about this new category.
That's correct. That's why this committee is looking into into the process that the police department have implemented with this new general order, and what suggestions and actions that the board could possibly take.
Now, these new general orders, I'm trying to understand this, these new general orders are orders essentially issued by Police Chief Steve Belcher, right?
Correct. These are operational procedures on how he runs his department and how he expects his officers to work. So it's basically how he runs his department.
Now, does he have the choice of instituting whatever procedures he wants? I mean, is he the Führer, so to speak, of the department? He does whatever he wants? Or who checks him? We have no police commission like they have in San Francisco. Who oversees Chief Belcher's orders? Who decides, now, wait a minute, you can't do that?
Mm-hmm. I think his orders have to be legal, so that that means the city attorney would look at any procedures that he was drafting to make sure that from a legal standpoint that he could do that. I would assume, I don't know for sure because I'm not part of that process, that the POA would be interested in any procedural changes that he wants to implement and that they would be involved in.
POA, of course, is the Police Officers Association.
Correct.
Previously headed by Fighting Steve Clark, now headed by another officer, I believe.
Jim Connor.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I assume that they would be involved in the drafting of the procedures if a procedure were to change. And I believe the city manager would also be involved, being that he is the chief's direct supervisor.
So what you're telling us is we have a rogues gallery of thugs, that is to say, individuals who have no particular interest in representing any citizen viewpoint, the city attorney that defends the police department in legal suits, the city manager who hasn't made a constructive change in the police department in a decade, the police chief himself, and then even worse than that, the Police Officers Association, which is perennially trying to make things worse for the citizens and better for the police force. These are the only checks that Steve Belcher has on him?
First of all,
I know you don't.
I wouldn't call him a rogues gallery. I can't call him that.
Of course you would. But that's what I would call them.
Okay, and
I understand. These aren't your words. These are my words.
Of course.
Yes.
And also, I'm sure those people are involved. I don't know who else is involved. I know that in the drafting of the general order on citizen complaints, the Citizens Police Review Board was not involved and was not invited to be involved.
Let me ask you this. If that's the case, then isn't all this running around, endlessly meeting with a complaint tracking committee a form of useless jabbering? I mean, if the police chief decides to ignore what you're doing, are you going to be left in a position where you're simply yapping at his heels futilely?
Well, the other thing that just came to my mind was that we do have a city council, and I believe city council is involved, but here again, I'm not sure.
Scott Kennedy will no doubt lead the charge here.
But anyway, as far as what the
go ahead, I'm sorry.
As far as what the board intends to do, the board has the authority from the ordinance that they work from to make recommendations to the city manager and city council. So mm-hmm. I believe that may be a step that they choose to do when they finish their work of reviewing the general order. They will make decisions and then decide what to do with those. And one of their avenues is to take it to the city council and say, look, we looked at these things, we think this and this and this needs to be fixed or changed, and this is our recommendation. And then it's up to the city council to do what they want with it.
So for the first time in the history of the Citizens Police Review Board, you're suggesting the Citizens Police Review Board will actually make a recommendation to the city council that it will seek to have implemented. Or am I wrong? Have actually such recommendations been pressed before?
No, I don't think there have. The board has not drafted any recommendations to the city manager or city council at this point.
You know, my understanding was that this whole business came up last summer, and correct me if I'm wrong, when John Malkin and others discovered that there seemed to be an extremely low incidence of police complaints in Santa Cruz, and it was discovered through the testimony of several officers that complaints that were supposed to be recorded by the police department were not in fact being recorded in violation of the general orders that the police chief himself was supposed to be following. Is this accurate?
I'm not sure that's accurate.
Okay, how am I mistaken?
I believe that at one of our public meetings, Deputy Chief Larson stated that some complaints were informally mediated. I think that was his wording.
Right. So that instead of a record being made of all complaints,
right,
which is a requirement of either state law or the existing general orders, there were some complaints that were being, shall we say, sidelined off into a process where people were being persuaded not to file formal complaints.
It sounds like it may have been.
Okay, and that
I haven't heard from any complainant saying, what happened to my complaint?
Now then, this being the case, if it were true, given what Larson said, John Malkin for months and months continued to try to get some response from the police chief, which only came in November, what, 4 or 5 months later, in which the response was not even to deal with the issue that was raised, namely, were complaints buried, but in fact what happened was the police chief came up with a new set of general orders, which after the fact justified the process of burying complaints.
It appears that way, and I can't speak for the chief what the motivation was and the timing, how the timing was, whether they've been working on these general orders for years, whether it was in response to John's questions, I don't know. But that is the order of things. That John was looking into this issue of the low number of complaints, and at the end of the year we did have a new set of general orders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Well, so we have this this committee that's taking place from 7 to 9 on Wednesday night at Loudoun Nelson Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at this point people can come in and attempt to disturb the rather solemn ritual of the Citizens Police Review Board. I found that trying to disturb a meeting with Kay Bowden is like walking into a church and farting or something. But I'm glad that these meetings are open. I'm always pleased that that's the case. There has been some controversy also around the issue of Eric Larson and John Malkin. Didn't this come up at the last meeting?
It did.
I understand Mr. Larson wrote a letter to Mayor Rotkin complaining that John Malkin was being unfavorable to the police chief in various unnamed comments that John made. Is that accurate?
Yeah, he alleged inappropriate comments by John at a meeting of service providers in the Beach Flats.
Right, and but in fact, has Eric yet come down with any specific criticisms of Malkin, or is it still a case of he just had some unnamed comments that Malkin didn't like? I mean, that Eric didn't like.
I'm not really free to talk about this right now because the board directed the chair to contact people that were at the meeting and
to discuss it.
To get their view of what happened, and Kay is currently compiling that information and will be presenting it to the board on at the next meeting on April 8th. So I don't have all that information.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, all I know is what I heard at the meeting and what I read in the letter from Eric Larson. And again, I was very dismayed that the board seemed to give no direct support to John Malkin, not even in terms of, you know, whether it supported his comments or not. That wasn't the relevant point. But the point is that he, as a member of the public, is entitled to make whatever statement he sees fit to make without having to tremble as to whether the chief of police likes what he says or not. I mean, after all, you are, to some extent, in an adversarial position, you being the board, is in an adversarial position to the police chief, and naturally can be expected to be perhaps even critical of the police chief on occasion, right? I mean, what must one then become concerned that you know, one will have no support on the board unless one is, and I continue to hear this man referred to as the chief in sort of endearing terms as though he's some sort of some football hero, you know, on the team. I appreciate your being patient with us in this interview, and I want to acknowledge for all our listeners that Gary's opinions and mine are quite different on a number of issues, and Gary has been quite helpful in providing us with some information, you know, regarding how the processes work, what's coming up in the schedule. Any other meetings coming up, Gary, we should know about?
Those are the only two scheduled that I know of at this time. Our regular meeting on Monday the 8th and the tracking process committee on tomorrow.
Okay, so that's good. So that the 8th will be next Monday, and that's your standard Citizens Police Review Board meeting at 5 o'clock at City Hall.
Correct.
And then at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, we have the Loudoun Nelson. Maybe it'll make some difference, but I doubt it. Complaint. That's my characterization. of you know, how can we get Chief Belcher to stop suddenly creating new orders after the fact? Oh dear, and then orders that seem a little strange to on top of that. Anyway, are you going to be around at noon? Because I have a complaint I wish to process, and I understand you're not going to be in the office.
I'm not. I've got a meeting at Familia Center that I need to go to. In fact, I need to be there in 5 minutes.
Well, so perhaps we need to make an appointment for tomorrow.
That would be fine.
Sometime between 9 and 10, perhaps.
I will be here.
Sounds good. And Gary, I do appreciate your patience under fire.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robert.
And that was Gary Yamane of the Citizens Police Review Board. Kind of an update. In the studio, we have the sneezing fool, Just Man Jim Costner. Hi.
Hello, everybody.
And we also have...
Victoria.
And Victoria. I haven't thought of a name for Victoria yet, but I'm sure we'll think of something. So you two just came from court.
That's right. We just came to court where BD, David Dumars, was railroaded by the judge, Barton.
Did anybody do a tape recording of this whole process?
I'm hoping that somebody did. I'm not aware at this time if somebody did or not.
And how long did this process take?
It was about a 20-minute process of actually being in the court, possibly 15 minutes.
And what happened? Give us a blow-by-blow description.
Well, blow-by-blow was that Ed Fry, BD's defense attorney, was representing his case, and Ed Fry was basically putting forth that 4 days in jail and already what has happened to BD is sufficient enough for the alleged crimes that BD supposedly have committed. Now, the DA, or the assistant DA, disagreed and said that to the charge that BD is being charged with is criminal vandalism, because there was written on a newspaper stand that the New World Order has a Third Reich odor.
Ooh, I like it.
And so he is supposedly they are very clear, the judge and the DA and the police, know that BD did this, and therefore he's guilty of a horrible crime, and therefore he deserves 45 days in jail, which is what Judge Barton ruled today, that he, David Dumars, will serve 45 days in jail.
Now, was this a sentencing hearing?
It was a sentencing hearing, and after the verdict was ruled by the judge, Ed Fry asked for an appeal and a continuation, which will happen on May 1st.
Well, and usually a sentencing hearing provides an opportunity to hear witnesses. Was BD, David Dumars, able to call witnesses?
There were no witnesses present at the trial today.
And did Judge Barracuda Barton, as I call him, allow for the possibility of witnesses, or did he simply just announce sentence pro forma?
Well, Ed Fry and BD both didn't call upon witnesses, and therefore it's hard to determine what the judge's outcome was, because there was no witness that was called upon to give testimony. The thing that I find interesting about this case is the judge said today that because there was a witness who saw David Dumars by the newspaper stand that had this alleged writing on it, the witness didn't say that he saw David Dumars write this. He didn't say that that anybody actually saw David Dumars do the supposed crime. But the fact that the witness said, well, he was standing by the newspaper stand, is enough evidence that the judge then ruled that, yes, you are a criminal vandalist, and that is a crime, and therefore to redirect you, to punish you, to get you to understand not to do that, naughty, naughty, that we'll have to put you in a cage in the land of the free for 45 days.
Now, wasn't BD convicted of this in a jury trial?
Yes, he was.
So, in essence, it was determined that he was the guilty party in this heinous crime of truth in advertising for the Sentinel.
Well, for me, the reality is that David Dumars is innocent, that he did not cause a crime, he did not do anything that caused any human being suffering, pain, misery whatsoever. The fact that the police grabbed his hair is a crime. The fact that the police threw him on the ground is a crime. The fact that the police sprayed him in the eyes with pepper gas is a crime. The fact that then the police sprayed him again the next day with pepper gas is a crime, which makes them criminals. The fact that the judge and the bailiff and the DA and the assistant DA and the police all in collusion worked to putting this man behind bars are all criminals, and that is a serious crime. And what's going to stop that is the people caring and getting involved in the struggle to demand that Judge Barton not put this man in a cage.
Indeed. So he has until May 1st when he has to surrender. Well, what's the date he has?
May 1st.
May 1st. May Day. I see. Also my sister's birthday, I'd like to point out, for all you sentimental people.
And also International Workers' Day of the World, a day where people all throughout the planet are figuring out and scheming and plotting about how to do away with all oppression.
Indeed. As we should.
So he's, how's BD feeling? Is he down in the dumps? How's he, what's his mood?
I'm sure that he doesn't feel good about the threat of being locked up for 45 days, but yet BD is strong, which is why they're coming after him. BD is militant, which is why they're coming after him. BD is a resister, which is why they're coming after him. Now, what he is calling for is a defense committee, which he wants particular people who are serious and who are have organizational skills and who do care about this case to get involved in the process of getting more people involved in this. Now, he does not see it as just something about himself. He understands that the reason why they're going after him is because of his concern, compassion, organizational skills, political education, and the resistance that he's been able a part of galvanizing in this community. And I think that's what people need to be clear about, is if you want to be free one day, if you want to see the end of oppression, then not only do you need to stand up and get off your knees and stop being slave-like, you need also to support those people who've already broken their chains and are standing up and are talking about and are fighting and are resisting for the change on this planet.
Now, is there a number people can call if they wish to form this, join this committee?
Because of security reasons, he is not willing to give his phone number, which I completely understand. But perhaps yourself might be willing to give yours as a contact. And I myself, I work with the Revolutionary Coalition, and our number is 421-9250, and we plan to be instrumental in this process of having him not be put in a cage. And if anybody would like to contact me with for more information or also to get involved in the struggle around this case or this issue, please call at any time of the day 421-9250.
421-9250. Yeah, that's the number to call. You'll be talking to Jim Costner. And the case of David Dumars, again, this is an activist who was pepper gassed twice, fundamentally for protesting police mistreatment of homeless activists when they closed down a homeless vigil